lights out, and away we go.
Scott and Rick.
I don't really have a lot to comment on that.
Danny and Sunday have crashed. They've got into each other.
I wasn't listening. No idea what you're speaking about.
This is the F1 Podcast. Two Soft Compounds.
Hello and welcome to another Two Soft Compounds podcast. My name is Scott Hughes.
I'm Rick Horton.
And we will be catching up with Nicky later on from At Lights Out. You can follow him on Twitter. He's got all the pre-race stats for us for the British Grand Prix. Of course, the British Grand Prix was the first ever Grand Prix in 1950. You were around back then, weren't you?
Easy tiger, yeah. Easy tiger.
In the black and white days.
Yes, I was black and white back then.
So the first ever Grand Prix was at Silverstone, and we are now looking this weekend at the next Grand Prix, which of course is back at Silverstone. Question is, will this be the last ever one?
Well, they say that every year, don't they? It's now owned by the British Drivers Association, or Drivers Club, which it has been for several years. They were the ones that made the changes to the track and the new start-finish line and everything else a couple of years ago. But every year they say, oh, it's threatened. They're talking about doing a street race in London and dropping the Silverstone Grand Prix from the calendar. I can't see that.
That's negotiating, surely, though, isn't it? It's like a contract thing, isn't it? Where you go, well, you know, I've got other offers over here, so, you know, you need to up your offer, otherwise I'll, you know, and is it a bit of that, do you think, going on there?
Yeah, and every year the owners of Silverstone, which is the British Driving Club, say, oh, we can't afford it, it's too expensive, so we might have to make this the last one, and then they kind of use that as a negotiating chip with Liberty Media now, who are the promoters of the sport. So I think it'll be around for a while, and I hope it is. It's one of my favourite circuits. You've driven there in the MR2 series, so you've experienced firsthand what those brilliant complex of corners are like. It's a fast track, and there are overtaking opportunities, and I think we're in for a good race this weekend, especially after Austria. People are more excited now because we had a winner other than Mercedes, and we think that Max may be challenging again this weekend.
Yeah, like you say, when they do the club racing, as they call it, with the MR2s and stuff, they split it into the two tracks. You've got the national track and the international track. Obviously, for the Grand Prix circuit, they put those two together. But yeah, you're right, it's a very fast track. You know, I've done Croft, I've done Cadwell Park, I've done loads of those kind of tracks. And you get the impression with Silverstone, it's an enormous track, and it is literally like turning up a proper large football stadium as a kind of five-a-side football player going, okay, this is the big leagues. So you do, you know, very much get that, and that you're in the garages, and you know the whole building complex is just mega compared to a lot of other places you go. But it is, you know, like you've said, Hamilton said it as well, it's a Grand Prix we can't really lose, the original Grand Prix. I think really this, Monza, Monaco, you know, they're a Spa as well, probably. Yeah. They're the ones you can't really afford to lose. Otherwise, Formula One is not really Formula One anymore, is it?
Oh, and just a tip, this one's free to watch on terrestrial television.
It is, yes.
Channel 4 showing the entire thing, including, we think, qualifying and practice sessions and everything, which is great.
You can put up with Steve Jones live for a change.
Well,
that'd be nice for me.
If you can put up with Steve Jones, then it's worth watching Channel 4's coverage for free this weekend. Let's talk about just a little bit what happened in Austria. Obviously, Max winning the race in slightly controversial circumstances. The Ferraris not able to match his pace, but that was down to strategy again. And Mercedes with overheating problems, I assure you, they will not get those in Britain because of our temperate climate, which looks as though this weekend is going to be around 21, 22 degrees. I was really hoping for rain at Silverstone. It would have been the first wet race of the calendar this year so far. The forecast is for sunshine, which is a bit of a bummer because having a wet race at Silverstone with it being such a fast track would have really mixed the field up.
Was it 2008, I think, the mega drive from Lewis in the rain there, when you just literally couldn't even see anything from spray? It was like torrential rain, wasn't it? And he drove like an absolute dream. But you're right, I mean, that's one thing we haven't had this year. We've had a lot of very average races, and we are due a wet race. A wet race always spices things up. So, yeah, it'd be good if we can get a little bit of rain, but it's looking like it might be dry.
Follow Two Soft Compounds on Twitter and Facebook. Search for Two Soft Compounds.
So there was a lot of excitement over the fact that Red Bull were very, very quick in Austria, and obviously Max won the race, and Red Bull had a lot of upgrades, a lot of changes to the car, didn't they? Our technical guru Rick is going to tell us now.
Well, thank you. They kind of snuck these changes in, didn't really reveal them until after the Austrian weekend, but it's all to do with the back of the car. And if you look at a modern Formula One car, they have one big exhaust pipe at the back, and then they have two smaller pipes, which are either above or below the big pipe. And the two smaller pipes are the wastegate for the turbo. So what Red Bull did is they moved those two smaller pipes, which were above the exhaust pipe, and they moved them to below the exhaust pipe. And they also worked on some of the aero parts at the back of the car. So that obviously gave them improvements that they'd been seeking. Whether it gives them full grunt and engine power overall remains to be seen, because Austria is a track which has straights, but they're a lot shorter. So at Silverstone, the full-on, you know, full-throttle moments at Silverstone is one of the biggest on the whole calendar this year. So whether they can still compete with the Mercedes and the Ferraris like they did in Austria remains to be seen.
It's amazing that just moving your pipe around can improve your performance so dramatically, isn't it?
It is, it is. And I think it's a lesson to us all, Scott.
I need to move my pipe quite dramatically, I think, to do better in the MR2 championships. But no, you're right. The first turn as well at Silverstone is, and in a Formula One car, pretty much flat out, if not flat out these days. And again, having been round that in an MR2, which has got nowhere near the grip of a Formula One car, you know, that it's a fast corner. And it is a very sweeping, fast, like nice kind of feeling track. You do get the odd track where it's amazing how, you know, it's just bends at the end of the day, you know, turn to the left, turn to the right. But it's amazing how much a chicane or a beautifully kind of engineered bend with a bit of camber in it can just, you know, make the racing so amazing. And you know, to hit those sort of speeds as a driver, and, you know, I don't get anywhere near it, but, you know, to get semi on the limit of a racing car is just such a thrilling feeling.
And Silverstone, that first corner, I mean, there's a lot of tarmac runoff in that first two corner complexes. And we often see at the start of the race at Silverstone that they take to that runoff area. A lot of the drivers after Austria were saying, listen, you know, the Max move where Leclerc was pushed wide, they're saying we would quite like gravel traps and grass on the edge of every circuit instead of this tarmac runoff. It would make things a lot tighter, and it would mean that we wouldn't want to take the risk of putting a wheel over the edge of the circuit. Silverstone still has that tarmac element, but further around the track, they've got some gravel traps and they've got some of the traditional qualities that you'd associate with a proper traditional Formula One track. The start of the race is always an interesting one at Silverstone. If you get a great start here, then it's really good. If you get bogged down, then you end up in the midfield with everyone squabbling for turn three, which is the slow right-hander just before you get to the back straight. And I think that sometimes catches people out. We've seen people spinning at that turn on the opening lap in the past, and it would be great to see them all try and tackle that on Sunday.
They've added a few sausage curbs as well, I know, over the last couple of years, because we were told about this in our brief for the MR2 race. They added it the year before, and a car that wasn't aware of it went off, exactly what you're saying, they went off onto the tarmac area, didn't know the sausage curb was there, hit the sausage curb, and literally the car took off. And I've seen the video footage of it. It's absolutely remarkable. But they've added a few of those in as well. So like you say, it's a good sort of mixture of speed, some fast corners, nice little technical track, nice big circuit, good tarmac, a good little track.
I think they're expecting 600,000 people over the weekend. The campsites are always full, and the atmosphere there is fantastic. Silverstone was one of my favourite races to attend when I worked in Formula One, purely because of the British fans are so knowledgeable. All the elements come together, you know, great viewing areas at Silverstone, even if you've got a general admission ticket and you're not in a grandstand, there's loads of places to see it. It becomes one of the busiest airports in the world on a Sunday afternoon at Silverstone.
I think it's the busiest, actually. Yes, yeah. Like every 12 seconds there's an aircraft taken off or landing, and that makes it officially the busiest airport in the world, yeah, which is crazy, isn't it?
Let's just hope for some great racing. You know, this is a track where, based on what we've seen so far this season, Mercedes will probably run away with it. But are Red Bull that little bit closer? Can Ferrari sort out for once their strategy calls in qualifying and in the race and give us a great display this Sunday?
Leaving screeching skid marks all over the place. Two soft compounds.
Right, let's go to our pre-race stats man. Let's get all the stats on the British Grand Prix. You can follow Nicky at Lights Out on Twitter, and here he is with all the stats for the British Grand Prix.
The first World Championship Formula One race was held at Silverstone in 1950, and now 1,006 races later, the sport returns to its birthplace for the 2019 British Grand Prix. This will be the 70th British Grand Prix held as a round of the F1 Championship, and the 53rd F1 race to be held at Silverstone. British drivers have excelled in the past at Silverstone, and Lewis Hamilton will be hoping that luck is on his side this weekend. British drivers have had over three times more victories at Silverstone than any other nation, and the British national anthem has played out 20 times at the track. British drivers have taken almost four times more poles than any other nation at Silverstone, with them taking 19 poles in total, and their nearest rivals, Finland, have only five. and it's British drivers who dominate the all-time list of podium finishes at the track, with 41 podiums in total. That's over double the total of nearest rival Germany, who have had 18 top three finishes at the track. If Hamilton wins this weekend, he'll set a new outright record for the most British Grand Prix victories. He's currently tied on 5 wins in Britain with Jim Clark and Alan Prost. He'd also set an outright record for the most wins at Silverstone, a record which he currently shares with Prost. If he does win, Hamilton will become the first driver to have scored more than 200 points at the British Grand Prix, and he'll have scored points in every Silverstone race held this decade. Furthermore, Hamilton could equal Prost as the most successful driver at their national Grand Prix. Prost won the French Grand Prix 6 times in his career. Hamilton has won the British Grand Prix 5 times so far. But no driver has more wins on home soil than Michael Schumacher, who won 8 times in Germany. However, not all of Schumacher's home victories came at the German Grand Prix. He won the European Grand Prix 5 times back when the event was held at the Nürburgring. In Austria, only one Mercedes driver finished on the podium for only the second time in 2019. The team will be hoping for a top three finish for both drivers this weekend. Mercedes have taken 195 podium finishes so far. Another two will see them equal Lotus as the team with the fourth most podium finishes in F1 history. As for the competition, Sebastian Vettel heads to Silverstone looking to take his first victory since last year's Belgian Grand Prix. In 2018, Vettel extended his championship lead by winning at Silverstone. A victory this weekend would see him become the 9th driver to take back-to-back wins at the track, while a podium finish would mark his 50th podium with Ferrari. 6 different drivers have set the fastest lap of a race so far this year, including both Ferrari drivers. If either Vettel or Leclerc set the fastest lap of the British Grand Prix, the team will equal their record for the most fastest laps of a team at any one circuit. They've currently taken 19 fastest laps at Monza and 18 at Silverstone. Some pole sitter stats. The pole sitter at the British Grand Prix has gone on to win 3 of the last 4 races, but that gives a skewed view of how often the pole sitter takes victory at the track. Historically, the pole to win conversion rate is under 40% at Silverstone, with only 19 of the 52 races having been won from the front of the grid. Pole has had its dominant streaks at the circuit. The pole sitter won 4 consecutive races at the track between 1960 and 1967, 4 times between 1991 and 1994, and more recently Lewis Hamilton converted all of his poles into wins between 2015 and 2017. But in the 24 races here since 1995, the pole sitter has only won 7 times, 3 of those being wins by Hamilton. That being said, a good finish is still likely for the pole sitter, with 14 podiums from the last 18 Silverstone races. Another interesting statistic, there's yet to be a race here where the top three have finished in the order in which they started. And finally, Silverstone is one of the iconic F1 circuits, and it's no surprise with the amount of F1 history which has taken place here. Over the 52 races held so far at the track, the total sum of Grand Prix laps completed by every driver of the circuit is 59,904. That gives a total distance travelled of 301,576 kilometres, the same distance as travelling the circumference of the Earth 7.5 times.
Two soft compounds.
Thank you, Nicky. You can follow him on Twitter, of course, with loads of stats and facts over the race weekends at Lights Out on Twitter. And he's got a great blog as well that he updates with loads of little pie charts and stuff. And he was talking in there about nationalities of racing drivers. You know, British racing drivers have traditionally done very well. Germans have already traditionally done very well. Brazilians, quite good.
Yeah.
Finnish, obviously. Now, the Finnish is quite obvious because I think when they take their driving test in Finland and places like that, they have to basically learn to drive on ice, don't they? So that's why they're great rally drivers as well. They're naturally very, you know, from a very young age, they learn to skid and to control a car on ice because that's what their roads are like over there. But I wonder what it is that, you know, makes British or German better than anybody else, better than the French or the Spanish, say.
I think motor racing's always been a traditional bedrock sport in Britain, hasn't it? You know, there's a massive karting scene in this country. Kids can start racing karts competitively by the age of 5 or 6. Easy to spot true talent from quite a young age. I think it's all based on the nation's motorsport heritage and how young kids can get involved. I think that's probably what gives them the edge. Let's talk about the teams heading into this race at Silverstone this weekend. McLaren are now the best of the rest, really. Mm. Danny Rick said after Austria that McLaren are the team for the other mid-table teams to beat. I got the impression he was quite jealous of McLaren's success in Austria. Lando Norris has been just a dream to watch, overtaking Hamilton in the opening lap of Austria. This is his home Grand Prix. He's going to be really keen to impress in front of the home fans. I also think he's in a car now which they've developed well throughout the season. So they've kept moving it forward, McLaren, and they're getting some good results from the Renault engine, much better than the Renault team themselves, and that's got to be a positive. Williams apparently are bringing an upgrade to this this weekend, which they say is going to be significant. So will that mean they're no longer 19th and 20th? I'm not sure.
Will they get out of the car park?
Will they get out of the car park? Yeah. The Haas team had woeful times again in Austria. We put this down to them switching their tyres on, which we've talked about a lot this season. They seem to be okay over one lap qualifying pace. So Magnussen put it fifth on the grid and then had the penalty in Austria. But then in the race, they just seem really quite lacklustre. And we've touched on Mercedes so far. I thought Bottas was really like a damp squib in Austria. He said after the race that there wasn't much he could do about the pace of the car. When we saw him overtaken by Max Verstappen, he just kind of opened the door and moved out of the way. It was the easiest overtake I think I've seen all year. He needs to get his mojo back for this Grand Prix and be really up there competing with Lewis.
Yeah, you get a lot of spoilt bratitis, as I call it, with racing drivers, don't you? Hamilton's been guilty of it, Bottas as well, Vettel definitely. You know, and it's where they're, if the car's just not right, they just lose interest, don't they? We saw it with Magnussen as well in the race, where he was like, "He's the worst car I've ever driven." Yeah. You know, it's all very dramatic, adrenaline-fueled comments. If the car's not doing exactly what they want, they just lose the will to live with it, and they just stop. And it always gets amusing how bad it is. And I think we had a bit of that with the Mercedes, didn't we? Where Bottas is kind of like, "Well, there's nothing I can do with this. You know, we need to keep the engine down." And it's sad to see that. But you're right; they're going to be back on top. You know, Mercedes are absolute machines the last few years, and they will be back on top. I'm at the point now, we're just listening to the stats as well there with Nicky. I'm at the point now where I'm quite enjoying, even though Hamilton's winning every race pretty much, I'm quite enjoying it because of the records he's breaking in the process. So that for me is taking the edge off the fact that he's always winning the races, because, you know, like he said there, if he wins this, he's won more Grand Prix at his home Grand Prix than Alain Prost. And, you know, there's some really nice sort of mini sort of stats and facts that he's breaking each race, basically. I'm enjoying seeing that happen. I think he's going to beat Michael Schumacher. I think he needs another 11, 12 wins, something like that, to beat Schumacher for the all-time winning driver.
Silly season's coming alive at the moment. I mean, how embarrassing is it for Pierre Gasly to be lapped by your own teammate, which happened in Austria?
Was that because his pipes weren't moved, or did he have his pipes moved as well?
Well, he may. I don't know, actually. You're quite right.
Hey, you've not touched my pipes. That's why I can't do this. It's not good. I don't know what that impression was, but...
Basically, Helmut Marko from the Red Bull team has said they're going to give him until the summer break to sort out whatever issues he has. It looks like it's a confidence issue. He's not comfortable driving the car at the moment, so he needs to sort that out. So the silly season is really becoming quite big now. We've got rumours that Daniel Ricciardo has a clause in his contract with Renault that if Renault aren't delivering the car that for him to drive, that he can leave prematurely. We understand that a lot of drivers have a similar clause in their contracts, and it goes both ways. So if they're not performing, then the team can get rid of them too, which is why Gasly might be at risk, as is Robert Kubica. Mm. We're hearing that Ocon may be dropped by Mercedes as their third driver, which is interesting because he was sort of in line to replace Bottas. Mm. And we're hearing that Ferrari have a hit list of two drivers they're interested in, one of which is Danny Ricciardo and the other is Bottas, which is bizarre. And I guess this is born out of the rumour that Vettel may well retire at the end of the season.
It's so fickle, isn't it? Like you've just said there, you've gone from someone like Ocon, who was this superstar driver last year. Everyone was amazed that he might not be in Formula One this year. He ended up going as a test driver with Mercedes, and now they're talking of dropping him. It's like, I don't understand. You know, with Robert Kubica, for example, you can sort of see that, and the team will have different information. They can see how well he's driving against other drivers and stuff like that. You know, to us, it's just the Williams is horrific. It's always at the back, and it looks bad on whoever's driving it. But, you know, George Russell, for example, might be blowing Kubica away in the times, but only really Williams know that from all their internal data. But it's a very fickle business, isn't it? You make it to Formula One, that's one thing. To stay in Formula One is another thing. To become a megastar in Formula One is another thing. And you've literally got a handful. It's, you know, it's Hamilton, it's your Max Verstappen's, it's your Vettel's, your Alonso was up there as well. And that's probably it off the top of my head of the superstar level of driver.
The Ocon mystery is a bit deeper, actually, because Ocon is obviously contracted by Mercedes. So the only option for him is to sit in the garage at Mercedes, wait for a Mercedes drive, should that happen, or go to Mercedes' other team, which is Williams. Now, what I've heard is that Ocon, because of the pace of the Williams this year, has basically gone, no, I don't want to drive in a Williams. I want to be in a competitive car. So the dropping of him by Mercedes might be more mutual than we think.
Right.
So if they let him go, he's then available to go to the likes of Red Bull McLaren or wherever he wants, really, because he's no longer contracted by the Mercedes team.
And he's probably done enough in the past for people to know how good a driver he could potentially be. So, yeah, you could be right. It could be an interesting move on his behalf there.
Check out twosoftcompounds.com for the latest news, competitions and updates.
So the British Grand Prix happening this weekend. I, for one, am very excited because I can watch it live on Channel 4 this weekend for a change. And I'm looking forward to a good race. I'm not expecting it to be quite as good as it was in the last race because that was a pretty good race. But fingers crossed, bit of rain would be nice. Bit of drama would be nice. I've got high hopes now with the Red Bull. Now I know they've moved their pipes around. That's given me some good hope that Max is going to have another good race. Leclerc has got a point to prove now, so he's going to be on it. A lot of the drivers have driven around Silverstone a lot in their karting days and their earlier career, so a lot of them know the track very well. I still think you can't write Hamilton off at the moment. I think Hamilton will be back on pole with Mercedes. I can see Hamilton winning the race, and I think it's going to be quite an interesting top three. We're going to have Vettel in there, and I think we are going to have Verstappen in there, in my opinion. I'm going to go probably, I'll say Hamilton, Verstappen, Vettel. 1, 2, 3.
Wow, okay. I'll go Hamilton pole. I think Leclerc could start on the front row alongside Hamilton. We've seen how fast he is over one lap. So I think that could be good. Lovely to see Verstappen up there. I think he's going to be there or thereabouts this weekend. I mean, we saw his recovery drive in Austria after his woeful start, which was pretty amazing. Based on Red Bull's newfound pace, I think the finishing order might look like Hamilton, Verstappen, Leclerc or Bottas. I don't know. I think Bottas needs to improve his game to keep the pressure on Lewis for the rest of the season because he was lackluster in Austria. It would be nice to see it all mixed up a little bit, wouldn't it? You know, it'd be nice if we had a penalty. It'd be nice if we had some rain. I watched the 2003 British Grand Prix on Sky Classic Races the other night, and it was the one where the Scottish bloke ran down the hangar straight.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember?
With a wig on.
With a
skirt.
Wig on, yeah.
What was that all about? Did we ever find out what that was all about?
I don't
think
we ever did. He was protesting about something, but it brought out the safety car and completely changed the order of the race, which was brilliant. I'm not saying I want anyone to risk their lives to make it more dramatic, you know.
I'm getting my skirt out and my wig as we speak. Yeah. I'm ready to go, Rick. I'm ready to go.
But anyway, we'll review the race when we're back on next week's podcast, which will be available from around about Tuesday evening. We've got a Facebook page. If you could like that would be great because we have a competition prize after the British Grand Prix involving one of Lewis Hamilton's caps. Ooh. And it will be available only to our Facebook group likers. Ooh. So please follow Two Soft Compounds on the web, on Twitter, and like our Facebook page.
And enjoy the British Grand Prix. We'll see you next week.